We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again. And most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're gonna be winners.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Adam Mattes, DNVR Nuggets and VP of Creative Content at DNVR, and I'm joined by Mike Olson, who has a column, a weekly column, The Weekend. How do you say it, Mike, in your head?
The Weekend? I don't know. I mean, I guess you just do say the Weekend, or you pronounce all the letters like we do DNVR, because you don't say Denver, you know, so it's a good, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that until you brought it up.
Well, you say it. A weekly column, that's always a lot of fun. He has a different voice than anybody else on staff and always brings something great to the table. Today, we're going to be comparing and talking about two movies, two basketball movies. You're a basketball guy. You like all sports, but you're a basketball guy first and foremost, wouldn't you say?
It is definitely my love out of the majors, for sure. I really do love basketball most of all. I think just it appeals to my sensibilities of how fast the game moves and everything. It keeps my attention.
No, for sure. So we're going to compare Hoosiers, which does not keep my attention, spoiler alert, and semi-pro, which also I think is ridiculous, but I guess between a movie I loathe and a movie I just don't care for, I will take the don't care for one. So not to get
this is going to be a fun chat today.
I can't wait for it, Mike, because you're going to have to like keep people from hanging up and like just turning off this thing, because everybody loves Hoosiers. It's widely regarded as one of the best sports movies, and what we're going to talk about a lot is why I absolutely despise it. So this should be a lot of fun. I'm going to start you off, though. So this movie's made in 1986. When did you see it? Mike, for the record, everybody, is one of our most seasoned writers on
That's
staff.
Bad. What a nice way to say that. I really appreciate that
he's
you
old.
Put it in those terms. Yeah, I've been around a while. While I did have the opportunity to see it then, I think it was a few years after that. I think I was in somewhere... Yeah, I want to say closer to 90, somewhere in there.
Okay. At home.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. So had the opportunity to, you know, not have tons of people around, just kind of got to take it in as it was. So, yeah.
So Hoosiers is the archetype sort of sports movie, right? It's old coach with a mysterious past, small town that's very passionate about their sports team. And they're an underdog looking to upset everybody. I mean, it's got all of the major beats sort of in a lot of ways. I mean, 1986, it's not that it's the oldest movie, but for sports movies, you know, it's setting the trend, especially for basketball ones. So, you know, we'll kind of go over sort of the beats of the movie as we get here. But my first note in this one, Mike, the court was absolutely tiny. So like when they go to the gym and they start training, you know, I guess I should probably have like the cast name in front of me. I'm going to pull it up here because I just keep calling him like Gene Hackman. Like that's the,
yeah.
So Gene Hackman shows up in the gym and they go in. There's some players sort of working out, and that court might be 30 feet long.
Yeah,
that's my first note.
Yeah, I think you know, I think in ways they found a school that they were looking to kind of give that connotation of this school just couldn't get any tinier, right?
And exactly,
and so
yeah.
It's funny because after you had chatted with me and told me that these were the two we were going to be talking about, while I didn't get a chance to go back all the way through either one of them, I did get a chance to go back and look at both of them. And you look at this one, and it's funny because it does, in ways, you've got that, it pulls at the heartstrings. It does all of it. It hits all of the huge notes of what has now come to be known as these movies. But you don't realize until you go back to it, because it's one of the very first ones that kind of told this, you know, based on a true story type of thing, or,
right,
or inspired by a true story type of thing, actually is probably more accurate.
Yeah, inspired for sure.
It's really, it's so broad brush in a couple of spaces that you know, in retrospect, it does hit those notes very loudly. I will go with you there.
The idea, you're right, that they're painting like this town couldn't be smaller, this gym couldn't be smaller, like everything is, I mean, they really paint a nice picture of this very boring town. I mean, everybody's bored.
They've got this tiny little space, and that's kind of why you understand that they love things like the basketball team and things like that. I mean, I don't, you know, Fort Collins wasn't that small a town as I was growing up when I was younger, but it's still,
I don't think it qualifies.
You've been around those small towns up at least around northern Colorado where you walk into a gym and you go, oh man, I guess Alt really isn't going to be full tonight, you know?
Right, it's
interesting that way.
So the reason I bring up the tiny court, though, is because arguably the most famous scene in the entire movie, they go to the big arena in Indianapolis for the championship, and he measures, you know, how far is the free throw line? How far is this? And he goes, see, you'll find that the exact same measurements are as back in Hickory. And I'm thinking, no, they're not.
That's not right.
Not at all. That court's like three times longer, for sure. So it actually, it's funny because everybody knows that line. I didn't think that back in the day, but I went to rewatch this one. I'm thinking, okay, that's funny that the iconic scene is a lie. They have six players, but they only play five. When one fouls out early on in the scene, Coach Norman only plays four, like,
right,
rather than play five.
Right. Yeah, well, because he's punishing the kid, right? I mean, the one kid who refuses to follow what he says to do, basically he says, what was it? They've got like a four-pass rule. They've got a pass four times.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the one kid just won't. He just won't. He just keeps shooting and making shots. But because he won't follow what he's being told, he gets benched. And so when they get knocked down to four, coach is like, too bad, you know, keep going.
There's one guy in there that is kind of the like runt. In fact, he's actually smaller than everybody else. And
yeah.
It's funny because I think a lot of people project onto this movie like, oh, here's one of my big complaints, Mike. We can start getting right into these. One of my big complaints is that there's this idea of like the coach comes in and teaches these hard-nosed lessons or whatever. But the truth is he doesn't really teach any lessons. I mean, he's kind of a jerk. You know, there's the hard lesson of like, yeah, he's shooting, so we're going to bench him and rather lose this or that. But like, there's several circumstances in the movie where like the down on his luck player has to go to the line, or, you know, something big has to happen. And every instance, the coach kind of looks at him like, oh, him? And I'm thinking like, man, it's not exactly instilling confidence in him.
Well, they definitely go with sort of the, you know, they really lean into the old timey stuff. So they go with kind of that tough love paradigm, right? This is the way to get through to these kids, is just to tough love them to the point that they break through. And while I will say that, you know, I think that's not always the worst thing to do. I think if you were to do that with, say, every player on your team, right? You played on a lot of basketball teams over the years. If that was the way that the coach approached every guy, without any regard as to who each one of them was. What was the small kid, Ollie, right?
Not a lot of character development from Ollie. I mean, he does make two shots to win the game at a very crucial game, granny style, mind you. He shoots them both granny style, but like going to the line and everything, everybody's kind of like not believing in him, and there's no moment of like, oh, he was always unconfident, but he's grown and the team believed in him. It's kind of like he just happens to hit him, and then everybody's just like, oh, no way.
So here's where I think this is interesting for Hoosiers, because there was some of that. I remember the first time I saw it that I was like, okay, I'm trying to figure out why I did like this, and I'm trying to figure out why I, you know, what I struggled with about a couple of things here, even as I watched it years back. And you think the thing that was interesting to me is the director, the casting. They decided that because they wanted the basketball to look realistic, they cast guys for the team who were basketball players and tried to teach them how to act,
oh,
as opposed to casting actors who they thought could play basketball. Also because they were on a tight budget, and because, frankly, they needed guys who could sink the shot because they just didn't have time to sit and make it happen over and over again. And the guy, as he's watching other movies of these sorts, I mean, I think about, like, I'll be the first to say I love cheesy basketball movies, right? So I was kind of hoping that you were going to tell me we were doing like The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh or something like that.
Oh man, yeah.
Because I was going to be like, oh, okay, I'm ready to talk about this. Yeah. You know, and still,
we should have, to be honest.
and in this case, what he wanted was believable looking basketball. He wanted to be able to show a whole play and a shot going down at the end, right? And so he decides to cast these guys. And so I think that first shot by that first granny shot by Ollie, where it goes so short of the basket.
Oh my God.
That looks so pathetic.
Yeah, it goes
because
about
it's the same as like, yeah. It's the same as like, you know, it's that you've got a kid who can actually play basketball trying to pretend like he can't play basketball. Yeah. And I think it actually looks awkward that way, but I think that's why in ways, it played out that way. And I think because people weren't so used to the format back then, and then you give it that level of believability, I think that's why people really got pulled into it. I mean, the gruff but lovable guy, and that was a lot of Gene Hackman type of roles. You know, that it just all
oh
of it,
sure he was a very well cast as the like crotchety old basketball coach, and I think they do a very nice job of sort of capturing the feel of a high school game, especially a small time high school game where everybody's sort of dressed up to be there. You know, I think that's one of the funny things about it.
And he hated it. He tried to get the director fired.
Gene Hackman?
Yeah.
I think he's like the worst, right? Isn't he terrible to work with as an actor? Every director hates him.
I don't know that. I know that
Wes Anderson did.
I have heard that. And I've heard that on a couple of others. I heard he was really quite something, say on like French Connection, clear back when, right? I mean, all the way through. So yeah, he's probably got a bit of an attitude, but yeah, he tried to get the director fired. He thought he had ruined his career. They called him to come do voice over dub back ins, and he wanted to see a cut of the film before he would agree to come cut his voiceover stuff. And then he liked it so much, he came back to the director and he was like, how the F did you do that? Basically, it was like,
that's so funny.
Yeah, so kind of interesting.
I like that. That's a great story. A couple other things happen here. The format of the story is basically, you know, arrival early on, some struggles, you know, the whole training montage. You get all those, you know, things that have kind of become copied over and over and over again in sports. And then you get the race to the championship, or, you know, to the state championship. So the games are start out small gym, small stakes, whatever, and they kind of grow. Early on, a player comes to Gene Hackman. They're losing early on, districts or whatever. And a player comes to him with a suggestion. He says, hey, I think we can run on these guys. And Gene Hackman just looks at him and then like points at the bench and is like, get to the bench. For a suggestion. Yeah. I thought it could have been, you know, based on what I saw of the basketball, I think he's right. They could have got out on the break a little more.
Here's how I see this. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, and I hope it doesn't mess up anything you're trying to do here.
That's fine.
But I swear to God, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to give some sort of arc of growth to Gene Hackman, because at the very end, where he calls the play and the players are all just like frustrated and upset.
Okay.
And he finally says, what's your problem? And Jimmy says, I can make the shot.
Yeah.
He changes it, right?
Yeah.
He changes his mind because he finally believes in his players. And it's like, I think that's meant to be the finish of this no, 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 yes arc all the way through. And it's a little inelegant.
It's maybe. Yeah, and it's certainly better than hitting a kid, which is what we eventually find out. Like, here's one of my problems. This is the overarching problem I have with Hoosiers. In addition to, I think, like, I think everybody that like played up until high school sports or something, that like Hoosiers is like the best movie about basketball values, and I just find it like so not but part of it is, yes, Gene Hackman hit a kid, has had a frustration, punched one of his former players, and now is coaching again. And I just, by the end of it, sure, he has that moment where he lets Jimmy take the shot, but
yeah,
talk about small growth, like a tiniest little kernel of personal growth.
I mean, was he punished before for hitting the kid? Should officers right. come into the gym exactly. right at the end of the championship and
well, so off. So to that point, yeah. there is a brawl in one of these games, and after, like, immediately after the brawl, he shares a laugh with the player that punched another one, kind of like a ha-ha, and then play resumes. There's an actual – the stands, everybody runs onto the court. They fight for a while, and then it's like, all right, check it in. You know, like, check
yeah,
ball.
And is that meant to be representative that way? Because in a lot of other ways, they tried to do that stuff, right? I mean, the granny shot was actually a shot back
right,
then. They,
yeah.
they do the push shot, right? They do the one-footed push shot a lot because they taught these kids how to shoot it. They narrowed the key back down to 6 feet. I mean, they
right,
really
yeah.
tried to kind of go for that 50s thing, but was that fight thing because they decided that's the way it would happen?
I think so.
I think so too.
I think that was the 50s.
Yeah, I think so like, too.
You know what? Just your run-of-the-mill brawl. Let's just, everybody pick up your teeth and let's get back to this. There's a game to be played.
It's slap shot on a basketball court, basically.
There's right? also a player who rips open his stitches at one point, and Gene Hackman runs onto the court, looks at the trainer, and says, "Patch him up!"
Yeah.
No concern at all for this guy who has an open wound, bleeding profusely. another, just okay.
Well, maybe you know, it's maybe that's it. Maybe it's maybe we're back to the rub some dirt in it era as well. And that's what I mean. I mean, I think a lot of ways when you look at this, this is an 80s movie that's looking back at the 50s, and the 80s idolized the 50s so much. When
right,
if you were around
in
the 80s, there's poodle skirts, there's neon colors, there's all this stuff that's looking back at the 50s, the same way that, like, just in the last 5 or 6 years, they're looking back at the 80s. Like, you know, every 30 years or so, you look back at the
You find your parents' old clothes, like, in the attic, and you're like, oh, man, look at this, Van Halen, sure.
And you idolize it. And so, really, when you go back to Hoosiers, if you really pull it apart, what they really tried to do was say, this is what the 50s were about, and this is what toughness was about, and this is, you know, you're right, there are so many strokes and beats in that now that you go, oh God, you would not tell that story that way today. But for one of the sort of first of its kind in its regard, I get why everybody went, oh, wow, that's really
sure.
that's really cool, right?
Yeah.
I've not had somebody pull my heartstrings that way. And so I get it. I enjoyed it more back then.
Just, to me, the only thing, and I'm with you, I'm kind of playing the role of curmudgeon on this one.
But it is
certainly something to where, like, the casual sports fan who made it to, you know, sophomore year of high school in sports has this belief about, like, the coach should always scream at the players. This player should always feel bad for everything they do. And that's just sort of the dichotomy between, like, athletes and players. And
yeah, until the last scene where finally the coach goes, okay,
yeah, fine.
You can have this one. Okay. Wow. Look at how much he didn't slap him, I guess.
So,
right?
So there is one scene again in that same, I think, fight scene where it's after the guy has to come out with the open wound that really pisses off Gene Hackman. How dare you bleed, where he puts a guy in, but not before sitting him down and telling him, don't shoot it unless you're right under the basket. Like, it's just such a funny thing. Like, okay, you're going in, but just to remind you, we don't want you anywhere near the basketball. If that happens to happen, you're in trouble. So really cracks me up.
I had a little league coach back in the 70s that was so much closer to Walter Matthau in Bad News Bears than you would have ever thought. Like, like drank beer during our practices. Like, if you didn't hit a ball for, you know, 5 or 6 pitches, he'd start throwing to you underhand.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. It was that kind of a thing, you know. So
Mike, I actually never had any coach that wasn't that way. That's what kind of part of it's so funny. So I guess for accuracy, yes. But there's this weird thing where Gene Hackman's sort of the hero of the story, and I just, the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, gosh, this is like a very unbalanced human that's like around kids in authority positions. Terrible. Well,
I mean, and there's the point where, you know, after he and Barbara Hershey have just been banging heads and banging heads and banging heads, all of a sudden they kiss and you go, hey, what the?
Another complaint, a very unbelievable romance between those two. Barbara Hershey, by the way, plays one of my favorite movies, Hannah and Her Sisters, one of my like phenomenal role. Big Barbara Hershey fan, believe it or not.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so a couple notes here. Jack Nicholson was supposed to be the coach. He was originally the guy they wanted, but had a scheduling conflict. How different is that movie?
That is a very different movie. So I had actually, that's funny. I had not heard that story until today. When I was looking some of that up, and they were talking about the fact that then Nicholson runs into the director after all the awards that all this stuff gets, and he says, you know, I really wanted to cast you, and Nicholson says, oh, that would have been really interesting, and he said, how do you think it would have been? And Nicholson said, oh, it would have been an even better movie, basically.
I love it. Can I say strong agree? And yeah. I like Gene Hackman, but just Jack, come on, Jack Nicholson. It would have probably been maybe it would have had less of a cult following and lasted all these years, because I really do think Gene Hackman nails that like old coach vibe, and Jack Nicholson's probably too cool. Like, he would have just been cooler than your high school coach was. But it would have been funny.
Does the replacements the right way? You know, I think that's, I think Hoosiers is Gene Hackman studying to eventually be the comedy coach in the Replacements. And that's where he finally,
there you go. Robert Duvall also declined the role. He would have been the more boring option. He could have played the old man. He has that vibe as well, but he's not. Gene Hackman has an edge to him. Gene Hackman has like, I'm three whiskeys in.
I did not know the Duvall one. Would you have picked, out of those three, would you have picked Nicholson?
Oh, no doubt about it. But I mean, I'm all for the cool factor. And Jack Nicholson, like I said, it would have been a completely different movie.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting.
Let's move on to, anyway, so you're a fan of Hoosiers?
I still am, but probably more sentimentally than anything, if that makes sense, you know.
So, and yeah. I think I'm just heartless. Sentiment is not like anything I ever feel. So
that's what I always say about you. Yeah, just heartless. That's how I always describe you.
Semi-pro, on the other hand, now this movie is completely different, other than it's about basketball. So getting into my notes here, this movie obviously, the plot of it, sort of the Will Ferrell owns an ABA team more as like a novelty, like just he made a bunch of money and now he owns a team that he just gets to sort of do whatever he wants with. They're about to merge with the NBA and are not going to be select, or they're not going to make it. Only four teams are, and he works out a deal that the top four teams of that season will make it. So the Bad News Bears have to become one of the best teams. Again, another sort of just classic story. What I dig about this movie, first of all, I dig the look and the vibe of it. It's,
yeah.
I dig the funk music. I'm actually a huge fan of Love Me Sexy. They open with Will Ferrell's Love Me Sexy song, and it's just like so. Oh, I love it.
Me too.
It's just, I would actually jam to it.
I think actually, speaking of a fish that, or the fish that saved Pittsburgh, I think that that's where they got the whole aesthetic from.
Oh,
I think
no
they
doubt.
Watched that movie and went, okay, let's just make that funny. And let's just run with it, basically. So
and that's what it is. It's like an exaggerated version of the sort of like, you know, the 70s, the funky 70s. A little disco, a little funk, lots of soul. It also parodies the ABA, I think, just so extremely well. It's
so perfectly.
Yeah, it's a version that they present, which is like, I mean, the ABA was pretty ridiculous. We have the story. There was a witch named Robota. Have you heard this story? That the Nuggets hired to cast a spell, I believe, on the Pacers in the playoffs.
And it ended up backfiring.
They ended up getting destroyed in the game and losing the series. Classic Nuggets.
But there's a picture somewhere. I've seen it, a black and white picture of her standing on the sidelines. And man, I don't ever want to see that picture again.
It's hilarious because you could see the players that are just like, what on earth is going on right now? And so in some ways, Semi-Pro really parodies the ABA. And in some ways, not really. kind of actually just how it was. Can you imagine today at Pepsi Center if it was like, now, before tip-off, everybody, we're bringing out a witch. She's going to cast a spell on the Lakers. Let's all just pause for this.
Okay, so first things first, I do love the fact that on the NBA League package, you actually get to see the halftime shows 9 times out of 10.
Oh, right,
And there are occasions that the halftime show, I'm going, that's close enough to Rubato that wait, what am I watching right now? Is that guy throwing cups on top of a train seal? What are we doing? And still, I wish, I totally agree with you. I wish I could have been around in not only the ABA days, but like minor league baseball, every sport as they were coming up, you know, the AFL, the Redheaded Stepchild League that came in second, always had to do this crazy stuff, you know, this just insane stuff, just to get people to come out and check it out. You know, they'd have, you know, the baseball teams. I remember, I can't remember which team it was. A minor league team would start
Oh, a small person. Yes, I know
a
this,
small
right?
person.
Because it was
Thank
so
you. Yeah,
hard to
right.
strike him out because he
Yeah,
was
because
only
the
a
strikes
three
are so
feet tall.
small, right? And exactly the promotions that went on in the ABA. To your point, these were not. I don't think these are wild exaggerations. I'll bet there was a bear on a court at some point in the ABA. Have you heard the bear story, by the way?
So I have it in my note. I'm so glad you have. Look at you. Well, you were so you believe in show prep. You did the research. I'm kind of mad. I did the research. I could have just hit record. So
No,
there is a
no, tell
the
the story.
senior referencing is that Will Ferrell to boost attendance because part of the deal is they have to finish top four, but they also have to have at least 2,000 people in the stands for every game. A problem the Nuggets kind of have or have had in the past.
Right,
So
right.
they start doing these crazy promotions, including making Will Ferrell wrestle a bear, and it's pretty funny. Again, it fits that ABA like you're talking about. It fits that what can we do at halftime that's just so ridiculous that people will come. But the bear, the bear that they were used there had a very haunting ending.
It kind of it's weirdly like that freaky horse out at DIA. You know, it's just
That's
one of those.
oh, that's right. It is Blucifer. So
Yeah.
7 weeks after filming, the bear with another stunt person was wrestling and actually killed him.
Yeah,
Bit
the
him in the
cousin.
neck.
It's the co-trainer. There were two trainers. They were
Oh.
cousins, brothers, cousins or brothers. I
It's always
it's
brothers. It's always like twin brothers, the
yeah.
lion tamer brother. I mean,
Yeah.
Siegfried. Were Siegfried and Roy actually brothers? I guess I don't know that.
They no
They
no
weren't? Well, they were
they
close
were
enough.
not no they were not but
That was a disaster as well.
yeah, it was a disaster as well, just with other animals that you shouldn't be doing that sort of stuff with.
Another detail they have in here that I love, they trade a washing machine for a player early on to boost their. Now,
Yeah.
this
And
is
Woody
actually,
Harrelson,
yeah,
that
it's for
is,
Woody
if there's,
Harrelson,
if you could think of any actor that you would say, who would you trade a washing machine for? There's
right?
your,
That's
right?
very true. So they trade the washing machine for him. This is not too dissimilar to. Do you know the story about Kyle Korver?
Okay. I've heard like two or three different ways that this story goes. So set me straight on this one.
So
I'm
in
not
two,
sure.
Kyle, this isn't even that long ago. Kyle Korver, drafted in 2003, still in the NBA, drafted in 2003. He was traded for $125,000 from Philadelphia, drafted him and then traded him. And the reason they traded him was because they needed to pay for their summer league. Like summer league's a big expense for teams, and they were short on cash. They were getting, I believe, getting ready to sell around that time. So they traded him for summer league, but they had a little bit money left over, so they bought a copy machine. So technically, Kyle Korver was traded for a copy machine and the budget for summer league.
First off, I love that story. Second off, I can't believe that I've even got a random Kyle Korver fact for you that I've
Oh,
never told you
wow.
before. I've never told you this one. This is good.
This is an original.
Kyle Korver and I share an aunt.
Okay. That is fair. I can't believe you've never brought this up before.
My uncle married Kyle Korver's aunt, actually.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I feel
so
like you don't have nearly enough hookups for this. This, if I were like a third cousin of Kyle Korver or whatever you are, I would definitely be bugging him nonstop for like information.
we have never met. He and I have never met. I didn't discover this fact until much later on. But yeah, it's the truth. My Aunt Duray is Kyle's Aunt Duray. So
Well, that is
yeah.
really wild. There's one more trade I want to tell you about. In 1983, Tom Martin, a minor league player, was traded for a bus because the
Come
team
on.
he was playing against had a spare bus, and the team he was playing for, their bus broke down. True story.
So I love that. The one that I would like to know if there's any sort of history for, is there ever any sort of history for a guy playing on one side of the court in the first half,
Oh.
the other side of the court in the second half, like
Well, it does
Andre,
happen in, yeah, exactly. It does happen
right?
in this game.
And I've never heard if that's actually happened, like if a trade was consummated.
I
You
can't
wouldn't think they could
imagine.
do that, right? Because they still got to, there's waivers, there's all the, there's
Physicals,
physicals. But I want to see that so bad. I do.
it would be great. It would be truly great, especially like what would the box score look like? Would how many
I didn't even
points would
think
you
about that.
have? Like, would they just add them together? I
Yeah,
think it'd be
would
great.
you? I love it.
So the another thing that semi-pro and Hoosiers have in common, both games, big games come down to granny shots. There's a granny free throw to
Hey,
win this.
look at
To
you.
yeah, so a little crossover there.
Okay, I'm really proud of you because I tried. I tried really hard on this one because I'm a. Do you play the Kevin Bacon game?
Oh,
Have you seen
sure. Six
the,
degrees, yeah,
whatever, Six
sure.
Degrees of Kevin Bacon? I'm a geek about that game. I actually really love to play it, and I really wanted so bad to get like super obscure and find out that when I couldn't find out that it was they had any like shared actors, and of course what they're 22 years apart, so of
Sure,
course they didn't
yeah.
have any shared. But I wanted to find out that like the AD on one of them was the third something
Yeah.
that the one guy had been, and I couldn't find anything. Damn it, I tried so hard.
Well, that was my
That
forced one.
was good. I liked it. It was pretty well done.
They also they win the game by inventing the alley-oop, which is I'm
My
a
favorite scene in the whole
then
movie.
fake the pass and go straight to the basket. Twiggy, how hard is it?
He keeps throwing elbows. What do you want me to do?
I want you to stand up to him, you pussy.
Monix, wait. I gotta tell these guys something. I had a dream. I had a dream I was in heaven. And my mother spoke to me. She was wearing this flowing white gown, and she showed me a brand new way to score a basket. She called it the alley-oop. She spoke to me and she said, "With this gift, you will win fourth place."
I'm a curmudgeon, and I didn't necessarily like laugh a whole lot of at this movie. And I'm going to talk about that here in a second. But I did kind of like that as being like a plot device, the invention of the alley-oop. It reminds me, do you remember the Sweet River Baines sketch from Saturday Night Live? An all-timer. Michael
It's awesome.
Jordan is the first black Harlem Globetrotter. There was a time when the Harlem Globetrotters were very buttoned up, just like no crazy passes, no nothing. And then, of course, Michael Jordan taught him how to do it, but was too good. It's a pretty hilarious sketch.
Love that sketch. I do.
Is Will Ferrell a good sports movie guy? We've got semi-pro, Talladega Nights, Kicking and Screaming, Blades of Glory. That's four sports movies. That's a lot for a career.
It really is. You'd think one of them would be good. I mean, you know, to no, I'm
Well,
kidding.
no, I'm with you. You know what the problem is. In
What's that?
semi-pro, he's a very obnoxious, in-your-face, wild and zany basketball player. In Talladega Nights, he's a zany race car driver. In Blades of Glory, he's a zany ice. I mean, it's just the same guy. We're just doing the same bit. It's just, oh, you know what's funny? The ABA, ice skating, NASCAR or whatever. So the formula is very obvious.
I well, and far be it from me to suggest that Hollywood might take an actor and figure out one thing they're good at and then just squeeze it until it's just dry as a bone. But yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you a bit. I think one of the reasons I probably love this movie out of all of the ones you just mentioned, I don't love it. I like it best of those, is because I think he's just most believable as an ABA basketball player, just at his height
I agree, actually.
and his kind of crappy build and all the rest.
Oh,
I
yeah.
just he suits the role and it kind of works. It's
He looks like the
it
guys
is
that were
kind of.
guarding Wilt in the old footage. Like, okay. I know he scored 100, but he's dunking on Will Ferrell.
And it's totally it is totally his shtick, right? Yeah. And I it's funny because I went back to that alley-oop scene that you were talking about because I love it so much. And it was weird because watching that up against Hoosiers was the first time I went, oh, yeah, it actually does make a difference when a guy takes a shot from 20 feet out and you watch it go down, as opposed to how much they had to edit that just to make it right. look like he actually takes that shot, right? And still, that scene is so perfect where they build it and they build it. The music's coming up. And you expect everything to just go nuts, and he lands, and then you can hear a pin drop. And every time I watch it, I bust out laughing because they just nail the beat of that dead silence. It's just it kills me every time.
It's pretty great. I wonder what the first alley-oop looked like. But everybody was confused.
I'll bet that was it.
That was just exactly like that. Most believable part of the movie to me, the names Jackie Moon. It's a great ABA name. Dick Pepperfield, Lou Redwood. These are elite ABA, like 70s names. Everybody had a, you know, some kind of weirdness to their name.
Can I give you a weird one, but it ties back to Hoosiers instead?
Sure.
The kids, I only saw this today as well, and this one kind of blew my mind. The names of the actors who played the Hickory basketball players.
Okay.
Those were the last names that were up on the chalkboard as the opponent's last names. So they actually got the movie twice. But I agree with you. Jackie Moon is totally every name. They nailed the names.
So
for sure.
This movie really makes me think of Doug Moe.
Me too.
Because I think Doug Moe is like so representative of the ABA. I know when you think ABA, you think Dr. J, maybe George Gervin. And those guys all obviously should be, but Doug Moe to me is the epitome. I mean, he sort of was Jackie Moon in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, think about, man, I haven't seen it in a long time, but have you seen that picture of Larry Brown coaching the Nuggets?
Oh, of course.
In the denim
overalls.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I think they are bell bottoms. I mean, he's all of him and Doug Moe, man, the coolest cats on earth in the ABA. Yeah. I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
Throw ABA some roller skates on them. They would have been perfect.
We should have to play with a red, white, and blue ball like once or twice a year. That should have to happen.
Love it. Actually, it brings me to my next question. Would the league have been better, the NBA, if it would have been absorbed by the ABA, the other direction? I mean, the ABA brought fun to the NBA. The NBA was Hoosiers. The ABA was semi-pro. You blend them together, and I think you probably got the perfect balance, although it took a little bit of time. I think the ABA ultimately, over time, the influence got stronger and stronger. But do you think it would have been better the other way if the NBA would have taken these teams? It's like, it's our league. We're doing the bear fight at halftime.
I not only really love that, but I'll give you maybe one better. If it would have worked out that way, would the Nuggets have won a damn championship by now?
They could have been the Celtics.
The ABA, right?
They exactly. would have been this bizarre exactly. word. The ABA absorbed it, and the Nuggets just have the best style. That Doug Moe team just wins 10 straight with their crazy, zany style.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? Well, this was fun, Mike. This was a fun little look at two very different movies and bringing them together, I think, at the end in a very forced way.
You tied them together. I can't believe it. If I only could have found one more way to have actually made a tie-in to that damned Pittsburgh Pisces, Fish That Saved Pittsburgh movie.
Well, Pittsburgh Pisces is great. I actually meant to go through a list. I'll go through them quickly. ABA names: Anaheim Amigos, Pittsburgh Pipers, San Diego Conquistadors. The Flint Tropics is no more funny than the San Diego Conquistadors.
Did you know that the Flint Tropics is the only name out of those eight teams that is not a real ABA team?
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. They use all the regular ones. It's so funny.
Really interesting.
The ABA is great. Well, that was fun, guys. Don't forget, you can check out our full bracket and all of our coverage on Movie Week. Don't forget to subscribe to all of our podcasts, including the Denver Sports Podcast, and vote on Twitter. Follow all of our different handles, DNVR_Nuggets, DNVR_Sports, Broncos, Rockies, Avs, all of that stuff. And you can participate in this very, very fun poll. And of course, leave a comment in the description. Let us know what you think. We'll move on to the next one.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.